And we start with another old dog on the scent of crime, Edinburgh detective John Rebus, the enduring creation of the hugely popular crime writer Ian Rankin.
There's a child on his own, and his spouse isn't there, and the house is aglow with the light from outside. Well, the house is aglow. There's a mattress downstairs full of brown velvet rolls and
The Apprentices with their dark track Even Dogs in the Wild, and that track provides the inspiration and the title for the latest novel from the tartan noir chieftain Ian Rankin. Even Dogs in the Wild sees Rankin's gruff investigator John Rebus come out of retirement to help former colleague Siobhan Clark solve a very murky murder. And the book begins with the death of a senior lawyer during a robbery, but the case becomes complex when a note is discovered indicating that the death may not have been a random attack. And when local gangster Jer Cafferty receives an identical message, Detective Inspector Clark decides that Rebus may be able to help. Ian Rankin published the first Rebus novel back in 1987, and the series has been translated into 36 languages, and it's won numerous crime writing awards, and we'll meet Rankin in just a moment. But first, we cross to Edinburgh, where we can actually go on a Rebus tour. Our producer, Fiona Kroll, is with tour guide Colin Brown.
I'm joined by Colin Brown, who runs the Rebus tours here in Edinburgh. A bit of a dreek, soggy, wet day.
You've learned a wonderful Scottish word. It's the first word that everybody learns when they come here. Dreich. It's a kind of, it's not actually raining, but it's very wet and miserable.
And we're standing outside the Royal Oak Hotel or pub. Maybe set the scene, Colin, so the importance of this pub in Ian Rankin's books and on your tour.
This is one of the pubs that Rebus goes to. It's a Rebus pub because it's a Rankin pub. Rankin goes to this pub on a regular basis, and I've actually got a little reading that I can do here from the newspapers a few years ago. Ian Rankin wrote about this pub here. One of the words that's used in this reading is the word puggies. He's another old good Scots word to learn. Puggies, P-U-G-G-I-E-S. It is a word to describe a gaming machine. So here's a reading from Ian Rankin from April 2008 in the newspapers about the Royal Oak. I've had many a good night at Edinburgh's Royal Oak. I like my pubs to be small, intimate and filled with regulars. But I also like a bit of chat and a bit of music. And I have a dislike of puggies and doormen both. The Royal Oak fulfills this remit and then some. I even placed it in one of my books. Detective Inspector John Rebus is on his way home one evening when he decides to have a nightcap. He is shocked to walk into the Royal Oak and find that his nemesis is singing a song in there. As far as Rebus was aware, Big Jer Cafferty has been in jail for the duration. But Cafferty has been released and the Oak is his first stop. I forget now what song he sings, I think it was one by Robert Burns. But he points to the sense of true democracy in the bar. If you have a song in your heart and a burning desire to belt it out, then no one's going to stop you. But you better be good, mind. Rankin always has a wee sting in the tail of everything that he writes, doesn't it? So that's it. That's a wonderful little reading there, I think, which is opposite to this this pub that we're standing outside here, a Rebus pub, the Rankin pub, the Royal Oak pub in Infirmary Street in Edinburgh.
OK, Colin, fantastic. So let's get stuck into the tour. What would be our first stop on the tour?
If you want to follow me, let's go down to the City Mortuary.
When you think about the morgue or the mortuary here in Edinburgh, you can't forget about its dark history, the part of that gothic tale of Edinburgh. You know, the so-called body snatchers, Burke and Hare, who in actual fact weren't digging up bodies from the graves, but rather actually murdering people to then sell them to the medical world for pathology students to practice their anatomy. So here we go. Let's go to the morgue in Edinburgh, where Siobhan Clark actually visits in this most recent Rebus book to investigate her case. We're at the mortuary. It's the most unassuming building. It's the daggiest building I've ever seen. It's a combination of black brick facade, white sort of plaster work, and a metal kind of top bit that comes out with a funnel. And, of course, I can presume that funnel is quite a crucial part of the building or what happens inside.
Yes, that's the chimney. Occasionally there is dark smoke that comes out of that chimney because, of course, it's not always dead bodies that are being found. Sometimes it's just a brown puddle that has been the remains that has been lying for years. So they have to dispose of it in some way. It actually services, if that's the right word, up to 60 miles away bodies could be getting brought here. Now, of course, it's not everybody that dies within a 60-mile radius that's brought here. Otherwise, there'd be a great big queue out the door there, wouldn't there? This building is specific to these bodies that have a suspicious circumstance attached to their demise, like a screwdriver sticking out your ear or something. A wee bit suspicious, that. We have to investigate that field.
Before we go any further on our Rebus tour, it's time to meet the very author whose real-life literary landscape we've just been walking through. Let's go to the safe environment of the Edinburgh BBC studios and hear from the creator of Inspector Rebus, Ian Rankin. So, Ian, can you take us into the most recent novel, Even Dogs in the Wild? Early on in the story, we find ourselves in one of those classic high-ceilinged flats in the new town of Edinburgh. You know, it was a grand street, as could be found in Edinburgh's new town, all pillared facades and floor-to-ceiling windows. There's been a murder. Can you take us to the scene?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real street in the new town, in Stockbridge, which is a very tawny part of Edinburgh, and Siobhan Clark, who's still a detective, Rebus no longer is in this book, is investigating a break-in at a senior law officer's house. He's retired, he's old, he's in his 70s, I would guess. Somebody's broken in, confronted him, hit him over the head, and killed him. And it looks like a fairly straightforward case. They've just got to find the culprit.
There's an interesting line there in the book about when they start to think, how could the person have got into the house? And there's a line that's, you know, talking about how the person had to enter this place, surely from the back. There's no way that he could have come through the front because he would have been seen. That really says a lot about the Edinburgh facades and what you try and do through these books of getting into the underbelly of Edinburgh.
Yeah, I mean, these lovely big Georgian houses are very secure. The wealth in Edinburgh likes to hide behind thick walls and thick wooden doors. And if you're someone who's been a senior law officer in Scotland, I would guess you've got quite good security anyway. So coming in through the front, and especially with the nosy neighbours, because, you know, the net curtains would be twitching in bits of Edinburgh if any stranger walks along the street. There's, you know, neighbourhood watch schemes have existed forever in Edinburgh because the neighbours are so nosy. And if you don't quite look as though you fit in, people want to know who you are and why you're there. And you just go around the back because it's much more isolated and there's less chance of anybody seeing or hearing anything because the stone walls of the properties are guarded by high garden walls, stone walls. And so nobody can see you from the neighbouring property as you try and force entry through a door or a window. So I just thought, if you're breaking in, that's the way you do it.
So the retired Inspector Rebus, he's back with his nemesis, Cafferty. They just can't let the dog lie, can they? They've got that last fight in them. Perhaps if you could give us a reading from the book, Ian, and take us into the world where Rebus has been invited back on the case.
This was the point at which, having sent the manuscript to my editor, I then got a phone call from my editor saying, I can't believe what you've just done. And it's because we're learning now for the first time that Rebus is no longer a cop. The Oxford bar was almost empty, and John Rebus had the back room to himself. He sat in the corner with a view of the doorway. It was something you learned to do as a cop. Anyone coming in who might mean trouble, you wanted as much warning as you could get. Not that Rebus was expecting trouble, not here. And besides, he was no longer a cop. A month since his retirement, he'd gone quietly in the end, demanding no fanfare and turning down the offer of a drink with Clark and Fox. Siobhan Clark had phoned him a few times since on various pretexts. He'd always managed to find some excuse not to meet up. Even Fox had got in touch. Fox, ex-professional standards, a man who tried snaring Rebus many a time, calling in an awkward attempt to share gossip before getting to the point. How was Rebus doing? Was he coping?
And we find Rebus in this book, you know, he's in a different world now. There's loads of social media, there's more surveillance, so he's got to cope with all that. But he still has the drink, and he's still smoking the ciggies, he's got the gruffness, and also Cafferty, his nemesis. There's this, you know, amalgamation of a real sort of hard man, thug from Glasgow. But they've got redeeming features as well. Can you talk a bit about how that comes out in the story?
Well, I mean, I think that there's an empathy, if not a sympathy, between those two characters, between Rebus the cop and Cafferty the criminal. They come from very similar places, very similar backgrounds. They've got very similar philosophies. They're both mavericks, but they're both people who look at the world around them, see it changing in ways they can't really understand, and realise that they are kind of dinosaurs. They are the last of their kind. You can't be a cop like Rebus anymore. You can't be a maverick. You can't be a rule breaker. It's not allowed these days. You've been knocked down pretty quickly by the bosses, who would have sanctioned it or turned a blind eye at one time because the media weren't around to keep such a close eye on them. And Cafferty, at the same time, has got a moral code. I mean, he's a kind of old-fashioned gangster who there are certain things he won't do. There are certain places he won't go in his professional life. But he sees himself surrounded by younger, more venal gangsters who are, you know, attempting to wrest his crown away from him. The one thing I always find when I write these books is that I'm never sure what kind of games Cafferty's playing. Even as I'm writing the scenes, there's a long game being played. And there's a lot happening just out of vision of the scene. Cafferty's playing a game with you and you don't quite know what it is. And he plays games with me, even though I'm writing about him. He's still playing games with me. And I'm going, are you still in the game? Are you still a gangster? Are you really retired? Are you really old? Are you really doddery? Or is this all just a facade?
And that comes out in your writing as well, that questioning process, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the pair of them, towards the end of the book, we get that sense, is there one good fight left in them? And that's got to be the question that's in their minds. These are guys in their mid-60s now. And, you know, they can't use brawn and muscle the way they used to. Cafferty can't physically threaten people the way he used to. Rebus, ditto. And so they have to use their street smarts. They have to use their guile and their wits to get what they want.
And just getting back to how you write the book, Ian, remember you've told me before that when you start, you don't really know what might be happening. What about with this book? I mean, right to the end, I was, you know, I had no idea, and you got me. So what about yourself?
I started off with three things, I think. One was an image of Cafferty standing in his living room and somebody standing outside in the dark pointing a gun at him. That image just jumped into my head, and I thought, oh, who is this person? And why are they going to try and kill Cafferty? And what will Cafferty do about it if they don't succeed? So there was that. And then there was a notion of Rebus having retired. And I thought, well, what can Rebus do in retirement that he couldn't do as a cop? And on top of that was the image of a treasure hunt. Because somebody in a pub had told me the story of an alleged drug dealer in a village in Scotland who died of natural causes. But the villagers, the rumour went around that he'd buried a stash of drugs and cash in the woods on the edge of the village. So for a weekend, they would all take up shovels and go into the woods and have a little dig to see if they could find his secret, his treasure, his buried treasure. So I got this notion of a treasure hunt. And what I did was decide I was going to have Glaswegian gangsters who would come to Edinburgh looking for something that somebody's hidden from them. And that person has now disappeared and they want it back. Closely followed by cops who want to find out why the Glasgow gangsters are in Edinburgh. And that gave me the nice kind of setup of having Glasgow gangsters versus Edinburgh gangsters and Glasgow cops versus Edinburgh cops. It's all kinds of tensions. And as soon as you've got tension, you've got a story. You've got a story. You've got something you can do. Yeah. That was all I had. I didn't really have much notion of a theme, and I didn't really have much notion of where those stories would end up going.
Okay, let's continue our shortened version of the Rebus tour with Colin Brown. Here on a grey, rainy day in Edinburgh. Next stop, St Leonard's Police Station. We've got quite a walk. How far is it from the mortuary?
It's a fair step. Let's get round to St Leonard's Cop Shop. Here we are, ladies and gentlemen. A very strange looking building here at the back of this building, a 3-story high red brick building. Looks like the back of a care home, doesn't it? Maybe, or a hotel. Now, if you squeeze round, I'm just going to mention a couple of facts and figures here. Edinburgh has approximately 12 murders every year, which compares rather favourably with other cities in Scotland that might be to the west of Edinburgh. where they have 50 murders every year. And we're talking about the centre of that very large city. So it does approximately compare. Edinburgh has about 12 murders every year. That works out one a month, doesn't it? Through in Glasgow, through to the west, they have 50 murders every year. Now, that works out about one a week.
So we've left the police station, we've carried on. Take us to the next spot, Colin.
Yes, indeed. Well, if you're not very familiar with Edinburgh, I'd point out we're still standing very much in the heart of Edinburgh here. The High Street, the traditional heart of Edinburgh, is only barely a quarter of a mile away behind me here. So here we are, and standing still very much in the centre of Edinburgh. And we walk around a corner, and there's Sugarloaf Mountain in the middle of the city. What is that doing there? Well, those of you who are Rebus readers will know that that is not Sugarloaf Mountain. It is, in fact, Salisbury Crags. It appears throughout the Rebus books, in particular in a book called Dead Souls. And in the distance is Arthur's Seat. Arthur's Seat looks as if it's much smaller, but it's not. It's a green hill. They look completely different because they are completely different. Salisbury Crags, obviously, sedimentary rock. And Arthur's Seat is an extinct volcano that's exploded some 340 million years ago.
In all of Ian Rankin's 20 Rebus novels, he uses Edinburgh and the more hidden parts of the city as very distinct locations within the novels. But I think when it comes to the themes of the book, they are just so universal, a microcosm of what's happening in the world. It's as if Rankin uses the detective as a great way of exploring society.
One of the things I like about crime fiction per se is that it's very good on sense of place. It's very good on the culture where the books are set. So if I want to find out about Australia, if I want to find out about Japan, if I want to find out about France or Germany, I'll try and find the crime fiction. Because it'll be very good on local politics, it'll be very good on what kind of social issues are, what kind of social problems there are. It'll give me a real sense of the places you should and shouldn't go when you hit the big cities. You might find it a good place to eat or a good place to drink, but it'll tell you quite a lot about the country and quite a lot about the problems that that country has. And I mean, that's one of the things that really drew me to crime fiction in the first place. And part of that will be the language and the cultural references, and I'll be finding out stuff about the place I didn't know before I read the book.
And you always reference music in your books, especially this one. The title of the book, Even Dogs in the Wild, is from a Scottish band, The Associates, with Billy McKenzie being the singer. Can you talk a bit about that song and the relevance of it in this book?
Oh, it's difficult to do that without giving away...
Oh, no,
yeah,
no,
it's difficult to do without giving away the plot. If you're listening to this and you don't know the song, don't look at the lyrics until you've read the book. Let's put it that way. I mean, it's a song about the loss of innocence. It's a song that kind of says even wild creatures sometimes treat their offspring, their young, better than human beings do. Even dogs in the wild could do better than this. Even dogs in the wild would care for their young the way that sometimes human beings don't. And this book is very much, on various levels, it's a book about the legacy that adults leave to their children for better or worse. And there are various examples of that, ranging from Malcolm Fox's relationship with his father, to the two gangsters from Glasgow who come to Edinburgh looking for buried treasure, the father and the son. The son is going to usurp the father at some point. The father isn't keen on that happening. Is it going to be a bloodless coup, or is it going to be, visceral? And there's lots of examples of that, up to and including Rebus meeting up with his daughter again for the first time in a while. So there's a lot about the legacy that the adult world leaves to the next generation and what the next generation do about it.
And you have two sons, Ian. Writing this, did you draw upon how you feel and what legacy you might be leaving to your children?
I think it was at a subconscious level. I think when I wrote the book, I wasn't... if you'd said to me when I started writing the book, what's it about, I probably wouldn't have said it's about fathers and sons. But then when I read through the first, second draft, I went, oh, hang on. There are so many examples of this about fathers and sons and their relationships and the legacy that it must be something I've been trying to work through subconsciously. And the book was written at a time when both my sons, one's 23, one's 21, had left home. And my younger son, who's 21, he's seriously disabled. And so him moving away from home was a big deal. And the house did suddenly seem very empty. Because when he was living at home, we also had a carer. So it would gone from being quite a big family unit, because the carer was a member of the family, to being just me and my wife. And so, yeah, I was thinking, okay, my kids are out in the world. Did I do a good job? Could I have done better? Could I have done things differently? If I could go back in time, would I change anything? I guess that's all the stuff you think about as a parent when the nest is empty.
You talked a bit about how in crime fiction you can actually really get a picture of the political scene or the cultural landscape of a city. What would you say that some of the themes are that you've drawn upon in this book?
Well, I mean, Edinburgh is a city that has been changing rapidly in recent years, structurally and psychologically. Everything from getting to Parliament, from suddenly getting to Parliament and getting devolution. We had the banking thing where the Royal Bank of Scotland very quickly became one of the biggest banks in the world and then crashed spectacularly and had to be bailed out spectacularly. That was a real kind of structural upheaval, an earthquake for Edinburgh. And so we've had to kind of rethink, you know, what city we are and what people we are. So although Edinburgh, if you visit Edinburgh, this is the thing that's always fascinated me. If you visit it as a tourist, you would think it's unchanging. The castle's been there for centuries. The museums and the statues are celebrating the past. You could walk down bits of the old town between the castle and the Palace of Holyrood House, and you could walk down a little close, a little alleyway, and you would think you'd step back 300 or 400 years. But at the same time, just below the surface, there's change happening all the time. It's a modern city and things are happening all the time. Rockstar North, the makers of Grand Theft Auto, are based in Edinburgh. You know, so the new technology's here as well as old stuff. And so it's that clash between the old and the new and between the city that seems to be a museum piece, but in fact actually has contemporary problems and contemporary issues and stuff happening all the time.
We're back on the streets of Edinburgh, where Ian Rankin sets his Rebus novels. Colin Brown, what's our next stop?
Next stop here is some steps. I'm slightly out of breath here. So here we are with quite a few groups of steps here, going down near the end of the tour. So it's time to do a reading from the new book, which is called Even Dogs in the Wild. Now, remember, this is several years now after Rebus has retired. So he's just like thee and me. He's a private individual now. And when this reading starts, we find Rebus, can you guess where? Just coming out of a pub where he's had 4 pints of beer. One for the road, he was asked. No, that's me done. But as he stepped outside, he paused to get a cigarette lit. Maybe one more, eh? His life was turning into a track on a CD with the repeat function engaged. Each new day, the same as the one before. He'd made a little list at the kitchen table. Join the library. Explore the city. Take a holiday. See films. Start going to concerts. One thing he had done was sort out his record collection, finding a few dozen albums he hadn't played in years. But there was a problem with one of the speakers. The treble kept coming and going. So he'd have to add that to the list, or else start a new list, redecorate, replace rotting windows, new bathroom suite, new bed, hall carpet. Oh, easier just to move, he thought. No need to flick ash from his cigarette, the wind was doing that for him. Back indoors, or taxi home. Toss a coin, eh? Oh, phone. He dug it out and peered at the screen. Caller, Shiv. Short for Siobhan. Not that she'd countenance being called Shiv to her face. He considered not answering, but then tapped the screen and pressed the device to his ear. You're interrupting my training. What training? I'm planning on doing the Edinburgh Marathon. 26 pubs, is that? Sorry to break into your schedule. I'm going to have to stop you there, caller. There's someone on line 2 with a less smart mouth. Fine, then. I just thought you might like to know. Know what? That Police Scotland is falling to pieces without me. It's your old friend, Cafferty. Rebus paused, his brain switching gears. Keep talking. Someone might just have taken a pot shot at him. Is he all right? Hard to say, he's not letting us in. Where are you? His house. Give me 15 minutes. Dun, dun, dun. To quote another famous detective, the game is afoot. Do you know who said that? Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Guide Colin Brown speaking with Fiona Kroll, who was on the Detective John Rebus walking tour in Edinburgh. And while she was there, she caught up with Rebus's creator, Ian Rankin. And his latest book is called Even Dogs in the Wild, and that one is published by Orion.